This morning we're going to be discussing verses 39 and 40. For those of you who like your handheld devices, text chapter 25. Yesterday we discussed 34, so I'm jumping ahead because I've already spoken on those in between verses, and anyway, they fit in very nicely. So yesterday in text 34 we heard Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary that proceeding from 33, where it describes bhakti dissolves the subtle body of the conditioned soul. So what comes after that? It's bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. So on that stage of prema bhakti, we heard yesterday that one doesn't aspire for liberation. Kind of obvious. But it places that the, if you remember from earlier verse, animitta, meaning without material attachment. Nimitta is a phrase that means cause, and animitta means without cause. No cause, no affinity for matter, not aspiring for fruitive activities. Those of you that have heard some of my classes last year, you probably heard it about 20 times or more. I'll say it again this morning. Something that I heard Prabhupada say a couple of times. Wasn't like over and over again, but it made a deep impression. I'll say it slowly. One of the primary responsibilities and duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly convince his disciples or students in the abject futility of finding happiness through fruitive activities. And that's the name of the game here. This is in the middle planetary reason. It's fruitive activities, mode of passion. Abject futility of finding happiness through fruitive activities. What are you supposed to do? Drop out? Like, you know, become depressed? or become an impersonalist? Or no. There is the alternative is the subject matter of the chapter. Bhakti. What's that? Striving for something else. So desire for something else. What's the something else? The happiness of the Supreme Lord. That's a novel idea. What's that? Well, it's beyond this world. Okay, then I guess that counts me out because I'm not beyond this world. Oh, yes, you are. Spirit, soul. Yeah. But there's this affinity for matter thing going on. So animitta, bhakti, depletes that on the strength of aspiring for something better, or the real happiness of the soul, not the illusory happiness of phantasmagoria. So, sambandh again, we were hearing over this past weekend a whole bunch about sambandh again. One of the principal, we had this whole discussion on one of the principal duties of a mentor. Those that are guiding or assisting others in spiritual life is to properly impart sambandh gyan, because that's the foundation, the spiritual conception upon which real devotion is established, not just activity, because a materialist can also ring a bell and wave an incense stick. And that's not what bhakti is. It's the consciousness behind it. And other people can cook, but cooking for Krishna etc. It expands into all the fields of activity. So the focus here is upon bhakti, and bhakti is so superlative that doesn't care a fig for liberation. We heard about this yesterday morning. So now this one is yet another dimension of bhakti, and that is the worldly affinity of, so that, so this is a preamble for what the verse is going to say. It's two verses, 39 and 30 and 40, they're put together. 39 is the affinity for matter program of householders in this world and in the next. And it states, the second verse, those who have bhakti have no affinity for those things, but they do have a very strong affinity for shelter in Krishna. So in yesterday's verse, there was this description of Krishna's pastimes. We heard a lot in the Prabhupada's purport about the pastimes of Krishna are not mythology or fiction or something just to attract the mind of very unintelligent people that need stories to keep themselves, you know, alert. It's transcendental potency of the transcendent Lord, and by hearing them, affinity for the Lord. It's again the mention of Udipan, stimulations of ecstatic love. The potency is there for stimulation of ecstatic love just by hearing. So this is Kapila Dev, and he's a Shakti Vesha avatar. He's an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acting in the fullness of the capacity of the Supreme Lord to give that stage of transcendence, which he's now speaking to Devahuti, but also for our benefit, explicitly for our, and for relevant to us, since it's for our benefit, to carry us to that position. And this verse specifically says, to such a person, I carry them beyond the ocean of birth and death. So Krishna, here Kapila Dev, is saying to Devahuti, I carry such persons who can awaken bhakti and cultivate it with great purpose, intention, sankalpa, desire, shelter taking. When that awakens in them, it's not that effort alone, but it's I carry them beyond this ocean of birth and death to the other side, into the spiritual world with me eternally. It's a dance. And it takes two to dance, not a solo. It's Krishna's reciprocation with such a devotee who has awakened bhakti in this way. So now, here's the verse, translation. Thus, this is text 39:40. Thus, the devotee who worships me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, Ananya Bhakti, that's in the text 40, Ananya Bhakti, so Ananya Bhaktya, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to the heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, anything else in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Two-page purport. Sri Pir paragraphs. Unflinching devotional service, Ananya Bhakti, as described in these two verses, means engaging oneself in full Krishna consciousness or devotional service, accepting the Supreme Lord as all in all. So it's just another phrase that means the same thing. Unflinching devotional service, what does that mean? Accepting the Lord as all in all. There's nothing else. Ananya, nothing else. All in all. Anything else? Nothing else. Everything is Him. Since the Supreme Lord is all-inclusive, if anyone worships Him with unflinching faith, he has automatically achieved all other opulences and performed all other duties. Meaning, the fruits of those duties is whatever it is, prosperity, the fruits of piety. It's already there. It's a subset of, it's already included. He's all in all. I don't need to do anything else. The Lord promises herein that He takes His devotee to the other side of birth and death. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended that one who aspires to go beyond birth and death should have no material possessions. Give away all your money, right? And don't have a house. Live outside in the freezing cold. That's not what it means. No material possessions. We'll discuss. This means that one should not try to be happy in this world or to be promoted to the heavenly world, nor should one try for material wealth, children, houses, or cattle. So this has to do with aspiration. That's the word that Prabhupada uses. Aspiration. Aspire to find happiness in. This is the same as the earlier phrase. One of the primary duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly convince the disciple in the abject futility of finding happiness in fruitive activity. So that's an aspiration. If I do this, I'll get that. Happiness. And we want happiness. That's natural for the soul. Fine. No harm. Desiring happiness is not a problem. It's a sign of the soul is present. It's natural. But happiness through fruitive activities? There's no happiness there. Then where's happiness? There is a happiness, so that's coming up, that this Rupa Goswami's description of detachment, Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagya Uchate. We'll discuss that because it's in the third paragraph. But finding happiness in service, that's bhakti. The happiness of the beloved, the happiness of the object of love. There's happiness in love. But the definition or the concept or the sensation of love in this world is not love. Or as Bhakti Siddhanta said, there's no love in this material world. Oh, wait a minute. You know, mother loves her child, and the romantic guy loves the girl, and the girl loves the guy, and there's love. And somebody loves their dog, and somebody, you know. There, in that case, it's the absence of love is, it's not per se the happiness of the beloved. That becomes possible, in short, when there's transcendental love. And as Prabhupada is saying, when that condition exists, right in this purport, because Krishna is all-inclusive, it means love of all things, but it also means the fruits of beneficial activities of elevation, ists, is included. One doesn't need separate endeavor. In Prabhupada's very simple way of expressing, when you have $1 million, you can solve your $10 and $100 problems. Real simple to understand. So, go for the $1 million solution. The topmost love for Krishna, and make that the all in all, be all and end all. And so that's the aspiring, that's the sadhana stage, but this is speaking of the bhava stage. There isn't anything else. And whatever that person needs, they have. Doesn't Krishna say that in Bhagavad Gita? Anyone think of the verse? Huh? Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupasate. Very good. Yoga kshema. Krishna provides. Yoga kshema. Whatever you have, Krishna preserves. Whatever you require, Krishna provides. Really? So it means I can stay home and he'll pay the mortgage and keep the heat on and, you know, I'll go to the Whole Foods and I'll just walk out with whatever I want. And they say, no problem, you're a devotee. Sure, go right ahead. No, that's not what it means. It's Krishna who is supplying. So we're serving Krishna and Krishna is supplying. It's a different paradigm. The world doesn't think like that, but devotees think like that. Two things, just from this purport, I'd like to speak about. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended that one who aspires to go beyond birth and death should have no material possessions. Akinchana is one of the words that's used to describe that, and in Queen Kunti's prayers she uses that phrase twice. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhir Edamana Badakpuman Nai Vair Hatyabi Dhatum Vai Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. Akinchana, materially exhausted. It doesn't mean like, oh, I got beat up so I quit. It means not having the aspiration for happiness and having things, possessing things. I wish I'll find happiness if I get da-da-da. In a recent plane flight, I was on an aisle seat, two people that didn't know each other. One of the, you know, they spent the whole flight just comparing. One had two devices, another had another two devices, and they were comparing what those two devices that they had, and, oh, I should get one of those, I should get a third device because it can do things that my device doesn't have. And there's a new one coming out, and on and on and on, and happiness will come by getting the newest device. That's called marketing. And, you know, the people that... Anyway, here's the translation. Minus that, the one can have shelter of Krishna if that aspiration for happiness through having things or fruit of activities that entitles you to have things, it doesn't... There's no buzz anymore. But it's not... then become sad. It's happy because there's much greater, the real happiness. So, my lord, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. And then the next is Namo Kinchana Vitaya Nivritta Guna Vrittaye Atmaramaya Shantaya Kaivalya Pateye Namaha. Krishna is being called the master of the monists, the impersonalists. He's the master of the impersonalists. They say they're God, and he's the master of those who say that they're God. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are the master of the monists. And then there's a two and a half page purport to that verse. So it's an important concept or important consciousness to enter into the house of bhakti. Is, of course, bhakti is when nurtured, when it's understood what it is, when the proper spiritual conception is there, proper sambandh again is there, then it becomes natural and easier, even easy, as you know, access to Krishna is easily available, as Kunti said, for those who have this qualification. No material possessions. So now, you know, what that possessiveness is going to be described coming up. It's a byproduct of false ego, that material possessiveness. I and mine, one follows the other. I am this body. And what is produced from this body is mine. And that's material life. And happiness comes from getting more things that I can call mine. And interacting with those things, creating happiness, that's fruit of activity, driven by false ego. So again, the previous 33, false ego, and the whole of the subtle material body is dissolved by bhakti. So this bhakti is a very rich, valuable thing. Commodity. You can't buy it at Walmart or Kmart or any of those places. It's something else. Possessiveness. Krishna is mine. That's the possessiveness of where Krishna is all in all. Because it's not mine in the same sense we normally think of mine. I put Krishna in my pocket, now I can walk down the street and he's just, I pull him out whenever I want him because he's mine. Not like that. In the mood of a devotee of Krishna, that relationship with Krishna, that's my only possession. And so in my relationship with Krishna, I may do this, that, or the other thing, or not do this, that, or the other thing, according to the indication of Krishna. That's the mood of service. In Nectar Devotion, it's described that Krishna's son, Pradyumna, had that quality. The relationship of Krishna's sons was that of servitude. So, specifically, if Krishna wanted something and Pradyumna wanted something else, he would do what Krishna wanted. Like, the question yesterday about impersonalism and, you know, being myself. But service in relation to Krishna is what Krishna wants. Now there's certainly some room for dialogue. Not exactly the Abbot stuff, but rather the happiness of being in a relationship. Anyway, and if Krishna, in the converse, if Krishna didn't want something and Pradyumna wanted something, then he would forego that something without any trouble, because the happiness of Krishna is the happiness of the lover of Krishna, and servitude is one of the rasas of love. And then more intimacy and so on. So, second paragraph. How liberation is imperceptibly achieved by a pure devotee, and what the symptoms are, have been explained. That's earlier, liberation. Now this is being freed from the affinity for household indulgences, attachments to having things and getting other things, and anyway, the whole project of a fruitive enjoyer. For the conditioned soul, there are two statuses of living. One status is in this present life, and the other is our preparation for the next life. Interesting, huh? If I am in the mode of goodness, then I may be preparing for promotion to the heavenly planets. If I am in the mode of passion, then I shall remain here in a society where activity is very prominent. And if I am in the mode of ignorance, I may be degraded to animal life or a lower grade of human life. But for a devotee, there is no concern for this life or the next life, because in any life he does not desire elevation in material prosperity or a high grade or low grade life. He prays to the Lord, quote, "My dear Lord, it does not matter where I am born, but let me be born even as an ant in the house of a devotee." So it does matter. But not what the, is it, I don't want that one, I want this one. It's, I want the association. So that's the desire is operative in relation to the Lord. A pure devotee does not pray to the Lord for liberation from this material bondage. Actually, the pure devotee never thinks that he is fit for liberation, considering his past life and his mischievous activities. He thinks he is fit to be sent to the lowest region of hell. If in this life I am trying to become a devotee, this does not mean that in my many past lives I was 100% pious. That is not possible. Like he's having a conversation right in the purport, speaking to the mind. A devotee, therefore, is always conscious of his real position. Only by his full surrender to the Lord, by the Lord's grace, are his sufferings made shorter. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, quote, "Surrender unto me, and I will give you protection from all kinds of sinful reactions," unquote. That is his mercy. But this does not mean that one who has surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord has committed no misdeeds in his past life. A devotee always prays, quote, "For my misdeeds, may I be born again and again, but my only prayer is that I may not forget your service." This is Brahma's prayer, Tatte Nukampam Susamikshimano verse. Very important. The devotee has that much mental strength, and he prays. He's giving us like three sets of prayers here. Quote, "May I be born again and again, but let me be born in the home of your pure devotee so that I may again get a chance to develop myself." Nice, huh? That's, you know, all in all. He is my exclusive object of shelter. And this is, so, this is not the Baba Bhakti, this is like, you know, the beginner kind of person. That shelter-taking consciousness is available. We wish to take shelter of Krishna in this way. Krishna provides his shelter, and with that he gives his protection. Same. So, whatever one's position, it's not, well, that's for people who are really advanced. It's for anyone. It's a principle. And last paragraph. A pure devotee is not anxious to elevate himself in his next birth. He has already given up that sort of hope. In any life in which one is born, as a householder, or even as an animal, one must have some children, some resources, or some possessions. This is this possessiveness again. You know, the akinchana topic. No possessions, because it's what's in the verse. He is satisfied with whatever is obtainable by God's grace. So that's an elaboration on the akinchana, or having no possessions, or aspiring for happiness through getting some more. So naturally we have some. It says we exist with something. That's the fruit of our past deeds. So whatever that is, we have something. So one isn't striving to get more. The pure devotee, or the one on the path of pure devotion, they're satisfied with what is obtainable by God's grace. We don't make the mistake of extraordinary endeavor to get something. Rather, we act in a religious way, and whatever comes by God's grace, we accept it. And so this is going to drill down a little bit. So he is not at all attached to improving his social status, or, listen to this, improving the status of education of his children. It's not the parents, okay, that there it is, I just send my kids out to play all day. They don't have to go to school. So it's the material aspiration aspect of, you all know the program. If my children get a very good education, then they will prosper. Not only that, when I get older, they'll take care of me. Although that second part is not explicitly mentioned, it's implicitly in the mind. So, it's the aspiration or intention of enjoying in this and in the next life. The mode of passion ruling even in religious life. And so there are religions that have that contamination of the mode of nature. Bhagavatam is teaching us how to separate that mode of passion and even the mode of goodness into the realm of transcendence. Even one may be just a beginner. How to cultivate that. Prabhupada goes on. So he's speaking of a pure devotee, is not neglectful, - he is dutiful, - but he does not spend too much time on the upliftment of temporary household or social life. So again, this is elaboration on the accepting and being satisfied with whatever is obtained by God's grace. Mode of passion isn't operating. Dutiful, that word indicates the quality of goodness. One does one's responsible duties of life in the mode of goodness, but operative behind it is transcendence. He is fully engaged in the service of the Lord and For other affairs, he simply spares as much time as absolutely necessary. Yatarham upayunjitaha. So, that's one of the two verses that Rupa Goswami presents. It's a very nice distillation of the Bhagavatam's teachings and Lord Chaitanya's teachings, which are based on Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are based on Srimad Bhagavatam, with repeated reference to Srimad Bhagavatam. He's just illuminating the message and his teachings of how the chanting of the holy name is to be performed in the practical affairs of life is based upon the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Rupa Goswami captured this principle of akinchana, or beyond possessiveness and so on, in these two verses. One starts anasaktasya vishayan. You know the verse, it's quoted four times, and just in Bhagavad Gita, it's an important verse. And the prapancha kataya buddhya is the other one. So one is proper renunciation, the other is incomplete renunciation. Palgu vairagya, false renunciation, monkey renunciation, the renunciation of a monkey who lives naked in the forest. He's very renounced. But so that's not the complete sense of renunciation. So the complete sense, just to the positive side, because that's what Prabhupada refers to. I'm going to read from Jiva Goswami's commentary on this verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, the vairagya of that person who employs objects suitable for devotional development while remaining detached from them is said to be suitable for bhakti. The objects should be persistently related to Krishna. Nice, huh? I'll read it again. The vairagya of that person who employs objects suitable for devotional development while remaining detached from them is said to be suitable for bhakti. The objects should be persistently related to Krishna. So think about your house and your stuff. And this is suitable for bhakti kind of vairagya. Here's his Jiva Goswami's commentary. With this verse, the author, Rupa Goswami, shows the type of vairagyam which is suitable for entering bhakti, and which was previously mentioned. The vairagya of the person employing upayunjitaha, because Prabhupada has quoted yatarham upayunjitaha. So this is what these words mean. Upayunjitaha means employing, utilizing material objects. The vairagya of the person employing material objects, upayunjitaha, only to the extent that they are favorable for his devotional development, yartaham, so that's his only as far as possible or necessary. So it's like it's measured so that one can be peaceful, and different persons have different needs to be peaceful. Some people it's simple, some people it's medium, and some people to be peaceful they got to have more. But that which is suitable, that's the language, the emphasis, is suitable for devotional development, favorable for devotional development. Isn't it? That's the accepting those things that are favorable, rejecting those things that are unfavorable for bhakti. While being detached from material enjoyment, that's the anasaktasya part. Asakti, we know that word from that the stages of bhakti is attachment. Attachment to Krishna. Attachment to the process of devotional service, and ultimately attachment to the object. That's a mature stage of bhakti. So, anasaktasya is without attachment. So, doing these things without attachment. So, that's this akinchana. No material possessions. So, it doesn't mean throw things away. You certainly, simplify and scale down, but those things that you have, there is a purpose. Part of the purpose is so I can be peaceful. And so I can use these things in a favorable way for cultivation of devotional development. And therefore I have this and that. It's in relation to Krishna only, or in relation to pursuing service to Krishna only. While being detached from material enjoyment is suitable, or yuktam vairagya, suitable detachment for bhakti. In this, there should be persistence, nirbandha, in relating the objects to Krishna. Very nice. That's Jiva Goswami's commentary. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. So nirbandha is not only I select and accept those things that can be used in Krishna service, I'm nirbandha, persistent in relating to the objects in that way. This is sambandha again. I mean, who am I? That's in relation to Krishna. And what is stuff in relation to Krishna? Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam, suitable Yuktam Vairagya Uchite. So the aspiration is, let me strengthen bhakti. And that aspiration depletes fruitive activity aspiration. It's inversely proportionate. When this one goes up, the other one goes down. And if this one is not up, the other one goes up. It just happens. We don't have to wish for it to happen. Or something that Prabhupada said in one class I was attending. It's not that the devotee needs to call Maya. Rather, the devotee, if the devotee thinks, oh, I've been serving so much, I would like a little break. I think a little enjoyment would be nice. And then they call Maya. No, Prabhupada said, immediately Maya is there. Just like when you are facing light and you turn your face away from the light, immediately there's shadow. There's no delay. Immediately Maya is there, keeping us entangled in her network of illusion. As soon as, so his appeal was, don't slacken. That's this nirbandha. Persistently. Not like, set up your household in such a way, okay, this is, and then the mind starts, the slackening of bhakti happens, one becomes complacent or worse, and the attentiveness to Krishna's service, the bhakti factor, becomes lax, and then the other kind of contemplation takes over. Immediately, Maya is there, bewildering. Maya, samohito jiva, atmanam trigunatmakam. Vyasadeva saw that in his mature contemplation, the bewilderment of the living entity under the influence of the three modes of material nature. So for bhakti to carry one out of the entanglement of material nature, actually as Krishna, because that's the last part of the verse, Krishna carries one out when he sees that aspiration, the cultivation of that following the teachings of Rupa Goswami. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. Anushilana means cultivation, following Anu, Shilana, the conduct of advanced souls like Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami and all of our great acharyas. They're very gently and very persistently coaxing us to come out of Maya and come to Krishna. And they're explaining again and again the how-to. So, the last part of the paragraph. Such a pure devotee does not care for what is going to happen in the next life or in this life. He does not care even for family, children, or society. Hey, be callous. No. It's the expectation for happiness and finding happiness in those things. Because it's already said, he's very dutiful, very responsible. But it's not like a callous duty or a callous responsibility or impersonal, you know, I don't care. That's not. It's devotion in relation to Krishna. Not the other kind. He fully engages in the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that without the knowledge of the devotee, the Lord arranges for his devotee to be immediately transferred to his transcendental abode just after leaving his body. After quitting his body, he does not go into the womb of another mother. The ordinary common living entity after death is transferred to the womb of another mother, according to his karma or activities, to another type of body. But, as far as the devotee is concerned, he is at once transferred to the spiritual world in the association of the Lord. That is the Lord's special mercy. How is it possible? As explained in the following verses. Because he is all-powerful, the Lord can do anything and everything. He can excuse all sinful reactions. He can immediately transfer a person to Vaikuntha Loka. That is the inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality Godhead, who is favorably disposed to the pure devotees. Or, according to Rupa Goswami's definition, those that are cultivating that. So, light has to go on saying, wow. And then, that's faith. And striving according, you know, by right means, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. We're cultivating this type of life and conception of life and seeing things and seeing ourselves and seeing others and seeing Krishna's service in favorable and unfavorable circumstances. Unwavering. Striving for that position is Rupa Goswami's teaching and Kapila Dev's teaching also. Any discussion or questions? Yes.
You mentioned like turning away and then the shadow example.
Mm.
So what I've seen is like sometimes when I'm involved in like services, which I feel are a little intense, and I really feel nice, but at the same time I have this tendency, like you said, the tendency to think like, oh, it was intense, I need to enjoy, or involved in some kind of devotional activities, just good, but then later this feeling comes in, and then in one way I'm thinking like, oh, that was intense, I cannot sustain it for a continued period, so I need to slow down or like get back to the normal.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. You know, calibrating intensity is fine.
But when I do that, I kind of lose what I, the nice devotional mood that I have, and I'm not really, again, I find myself like...
Well, so, then it's so the, if the question, there's two, at least two paradigms. One is, and it works this way, just life is like that. Sometimes it's more intense and sometimes it's a little lighter. And sometimes it seems to be always intense. But in any case, there's variety. One of the things that comes to mind is an Old Testament statement that's just describes what life is like. There's a season for all things. So sometimes it's, you know, Rath Yatra time or, you know, something that's like really intense activity. And then there's time afterwards. So when the intensity is there, focus upon Krishna is there, hopefully, as you're describing, and it's a very nice feeling and a nice mood. Then Rath Yatra is over. So it's not vacation. That was actually, that was the thing that Prabhupada was saying. Take a vacation from devotional service. So to calibrate intensity is fine. So that's where, if you what advice for you is, when that post-intensity period comes, maintain focus upon Krishna that internally is strong, while the external activity may not be as intense or is not as intense. So then it's a time for rejuvenation internally. So attention goes there. Because intention is service. This is a nice little play on words that Vaisheshika Prabhu and I were discussing. It started in a class and then we went into a whole discussion about it afterwards, where intention, which is exactly what is being described here, intention or aspiration or sankalpa, where intention is, that's where attention goes. So you know, if you to be inattentive while chanting is an offense. So how do you correct it? Go to what's behind attention, and that's intention. So now, in the post-intense period, make sure your intention remains not your enjoyment, but Krishna's enjoyment. And the application of that intention changes. It becomes more of a time for strengthening the basics, hearing and chanting, and reflecting on things. Another kind of intensity, or another kind of application of attention. So intention doesn't change, just the mode of expression of that. So it's something like, you know, you're going along on a street and you see the yellow light, or what they used to have, they don't have so much anymore, but flashing yellow lights. It means this is a dangerous intersection, so slow down, be careful. So when you see the flashing yellow light, or you know that that is something that's a problem, your attentiveness increases, or you give more concern to your intention while passing through that. You're wary. I don't want to become lax and casual and complacent. It's just the mode of service is now different than the one that was very intense, which is fine. Because there's a season for all things, and there was that, and this is this, and then something else is something else. It doesn't change my focus. It changes how that becomes expressed. I would say, as a comment, feeling a good devotional mood when things are really intense says something about the mode of passion. So, you know, the good devotional mood may be like a ramped up passion, and the happiness it feels from that, as opposed to specifically simply, exclusively the focus on Krishna's happiness. Because if that's the focus, and then the external feature of the configuration of things changes, the internal contemplation upon Krishna's happiness hasn't changed by the external changes. So now it becomes another application of that purpose. So that's another, when doing the intense activity, pause for a moment or two or three and contemplate, is my focus on Krishna, and is it really a devotional service mood, or is it, how much is the happiness of being riding a wave of intensity or passion, that happiness, how much of a mix is it? So then you can withdraw the and refocus even during that period, the intention part. Something else? Yes.
I heard that in the Bhagavad Gita it is mentioned that the devotee needs a recreation as well.
Yeah.
So how?
Well, what's our recreation?
Chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. And one who, so that's, I was going to mention that. Thank you for bringing it up. There are other forms, like let's say, we just had a meeting, and where we scheduled just interaction time without something like, you know, a presentation and get your notepad out and let's discuss the topic. It's just interaction. But that interaction that may be, you know, in the category of recreation, it doesn't mean, okay, vacation from devotional service. It's, you know, the mood may be lighter, but then, you know, it's Krishna Katha, just in general. You know, loving exchanges. Or kirtan. And, you know, it's very joyful and light. And, you know, it's not a care, or one's cares and worries and execution of duties and care, you know, all that. You know, one gets some respite from all of that, and it's now just, you know, levity and dancing and. That's fine. Now, it's the purpose behind it that's important. You know, it's not the activity itself is good or bad. It's, you know, it's in nature, mode of goodness, etc. And it brings a fresh perspective, etc. Appreciating the awesomeness of nature, and we're so much out of touch with that in the way that we live our lives today. But it's the purpose. Not just like, okay, I need to like shake my head a few times because I've been too much bhakti going on and I need a little break from it. Purpose. Devotee early, Prabhupada, it would ask Prabhupada, is it okay to appreciate things that are very beautiful in nature, like a sunset or a flower? And Prabhupada said, no, that is very nice. And when doing so, you should think, how wonderful is my Krishna? And probably that's what happens when you go camping. How wonderful. Krishna is amazing. Yes?
As you emphasize that there isn't happiness in fruitive activity, but people are still, you see, overwhelmingly engaging in fruitive activity. So what is the reciprocation that they're receiving that's compelling them to continue?
Illusion. Illusory happiness. The stimulation of the mode of passion. And that's called happiness. The buzz of passion. So they want to get more passion. More intense. And that's their happiness. There's no happiness. It's the mode of nature. It's an illusory sense of satisfaction from passion. Anyway, mode of nature, yes.
If I can ask an off-topic question.
Sure.
This question comes from my wife, which came from her parents, so my in-laws.
Okay.
They're followers of Vallabhacharya.
Fine.
And this question was posed in their satsang in their group, which is why was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu given the name Mahaprabhu? Because they refer to their Vallabhacharya as
Mahaprabhu.
And they only know of these two individuals who are known as Mahaprabhu. And there's obviously been some interaction between the two. So the question is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was referred to as Mahaprabhu. I guess my additional question is there only one Mahaprabhu?
I'm not familiar with how that came to be. Nor am I familiar with how it came to be that Vallabha was called Mahaprabhu. I can guess the second one, but I don't know. And the first one, I haven't. Just like, for example, we have the description in the Leela of Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill, and when Surabhi comes to with accompanying Indra and performs Abhishek of Krishna, she speaks, "You are our Indra," and the name Govinda is given. Govinda. And from that time, Krishna was called Govinda. So there's some, I don't know if it never was, Krishna was never called Govinda before until Surabhi said Govinda. There's a Leela. And so similarly, historically, how it came to be that Mahaprabhu was called Mahaprabhu, I don't know. Don't know. There may be some literature that describes that. I don't know.
What's the easiest definition of Mahaprabhu?
Well, the Prabhu is Lord or Master, and he's the Master of Masters. Great. like Purusha and Paramapurusha, like that. Brahman and Parabrahman, Prabhu and Mahaprabhu. Just thinking of a pastime about this Akinchana term. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there we go, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was making his journey from Puri to go to Vrindavan, but actually his intention was to go see Rupa and Sanatana Goswami and give his mercy to them in Ramakeli. He passed through the place where Srivas Pandit was staying. I forget the name of the town, it's very close to Calcutta. And because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left Navadvip after taking sannyas and went to Puri, Srivas and a number of other associates of Lord Chaitanya couldn't bear to see those places minus Lord Chaitanya. So they left. They went to stay at this other place. The town, I can't remember, or village. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling, he to go to see Rupa and Sanatan, he stayed there. He stopped, and he stayed there for some time. And he noticed that Srivas never goes anywhere. And he doesn't seem to have a job or an occupation to take care of his family. So with concern, he went and spoke to him and said, Srivas, I don't understand your intention. You have dependents, and you're not employed. You seem to have no occupation. And can you explain? And Srivas took a stick and hit the ground 3 times. Just looked at Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya said, I don't understand your meaning. Could you explain? And Srivas said, if there is nothing provided by you one day, then I'll wait for the next day. And if nothing comes the next day, then I'll wait for the next day. I'm completely dependent upon you. And Lord Chaitanya said something like, Srivas, the love that you have for me is incomparable. And the goddess of fortune will surely bestow upon you everything that you require, just completely absorbed in loving devotion to me. You'll have all necessities. And he embraced him and left. That's not recommended for us. But a person who is on the platform as Srivas Pandit was on, whether it's Srivas Pandit's platform or our platform, it's the Lord who's supplying necessities. So the possessiveness of going to acquire things for us as practitioners is not to acquire things. It's service to Krishna, and through the medium of that service, Krishna sees to necessities. And that's the devotional mentality, not what's being advised against in this verse and purport. And one who has such strong devotion to Krishna, then he'll take one to the other side. I just read that. This is Sanskrit. It's nice. The last 2 lines of the Sanskrit. Vajanti ananyaya bhaktya tan mrityor atiparaye. Atiparaye means I take to the other side. Tan mrityor atiparaye. Who? Bhajanti ananya bhaktya. One who has reached that stage, ananya bhakti. Whatever they require, I provide. I take them to me. It's like, so it's the all in all. It's just this one thing. vyavasayat nika buddhi ekeha krunanandana. Okay, anything else? Yes?
It's an off-topic question. This
sure.
is something that I haven't received a satisfactory answer. I've asked the question.
Okay.
Why is there such a disconnect between Buddhism and, the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, and that when you consider that Buddha was a reincarnation of Vishnu, who's an extension of Krishna, is it just the interpretation of Buddhism that's off, or how come there's such a disparity?
Good question. Have you read about him a little bit from the Bhagavatam? I'll invite you. It's okay. Canto 1, Chapter 3. There's a verse in which, among the list of avatars, Buddha is described. So it's there, but I'll unpack it a little bit. Buddha came for a particular purpose, and so his teachings were not complete. He was to fulfill a purpose. And his purpose was, in the name of the Vedas, in the name of Scripture, bad things were being done. And the slaughtering of animals was taking place. And Buddha came to stop it. So how he stopped it was, you say that the Vedas say slaughtering animals is okay, I reject the Vedas. So that's not a teaching that Krishna does, but that's what Buddha did. Why? Purpose. Stop, in the name of the Vedas, atrocious activity. I reject the Vedas. And instead, follow the principle of nonviolence. So nonviolence became the religion, ahimsa. So that's within the Vedas. So don't follow the Vedas, follow me. Be nonviolent. So there's one big discrepancy between what Krishna teaches and Buddha teaches. Purposeful, because the people were so gone. The age of Kali was roaring. So rejected the Vedas. Then another, it's subtle, but to protect bhakti from mischievous people, Buddha gave a teaching that's not what Krishna teaches, which is, he didn't specifically say there's no soul, and he didn't specifically say there's no God, but indirectly he did. He taught atheism. He didn't directly say there's no God, but the goal is nirvana. And what does, in the brand of nirvana, because that's a term in the Vedas, is voidism. What's the goal? Nothingness. That's not what Krishna teaches. So there's a discrepancy because of the audience. So for the audience, he was protecting, it's sequential. His teaching was followed by Shankaracharya's teaching, who said, no, you must accept the Vedas. But the teaching of Shankaracharya was, language was different, but it was essentially the same. What's the goal? Merging. So one says nothingness, the other says, the phrase that we heard yesterday was foregoing or forsaking one's individuality. So you're not an individual. You exist, but you exist as this undifferentiated Brahman. That's how you exist. The other is, you exist as nothingness. But Krishna's gone and Krishna's gone in both of those teachings. And then following Shankaracharya came Vaishnavas, who taught, no, in addition to accepting the Vedas, not just merging with undifferentiated Brahman, but there's a Supreme Purusha. So it's giving shelter, this sequence of Buddha, Shankara, Acharya, Vaishnavas is giving shelter in the Supreme Person. And then those that are just atheists, they have a place to go over there. Yaitam mam prapadyante tangstantaiva bhajamyam. A verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, as they prapadyante, as they surrender unto me or have regard for me, I reward them accordingly. So Krishna gave a place by Buddha's appearance for people that wish to be spiritual without being violent, and they have a place. So that's certainly elevation from, you know, cruelty. And then there's another elevation where the authority of the Vedas was restored. And then back to, so now there's the opportunity for full shelter in the personality of Godhead, unmixed devotion. So it's to elevate his appearance was stop abuse of all other beings besides, you know, my tongue and my interests. You know, in a broad sense, non-violent. So it's an ethic. It's a mode of goodness principle. It's not more than that. And the more than that is when you live by that mode of goodness principle, you can come to enlightenment, nirvana. And what's that? Nothingness. And then somethingness. Brahman. And then no. The personality of Godhead in love for him. So it was setting the stage for that, but still giving a place for others. So there's the discrepancy. It was purposeful. Something else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.